Welcome to In This Case, a podcast from Hilti that goes behind the scenes at one of the most iconic brands in the world of construction. We'll talk to the people who make it all happen and ask them who, how, what if, and of course, why. Here's your host, Ali Hernandez.
Welcome back. This season, we are talking to industry and sustainability experts about the growing focus on sustainability in construction. So far this season, we have heard from these experts about why sustainability is becoming top of mind.
We bear great responsibility for the stewardship of this planet, primarily because we can have such a dramatic impact, you know, both positive and negative.
What factors are driving businesses to invest in sustainability initiatives?
You know, there's many reasons they're doing this, of course, attracting talent, attracting capital, you know, lowering their operational costs, their risks. But it's also a huge competitive advantage that they can build.
And how all stakeholders across the industry must collaborate to meet ambitious carbon reduction targets.
You need to collaborate within the complete value chain and now in construction industry to make really literally a sustainable difference to the environment and also to the society.
One important through line in all our conversations this season has been the recognition that innovation and collaboration are key to achieving sustainability goals. At Hilti, innovation is core to who we are, and we are already implementing innovative solutions to reduce our CO2 emissions across scopes 1, 2, and 3. Among all the new green solutions and innovative technologies supporting us in reaching net zero by 2050 lies circularity, which has been practiced for centuries.
So I think innovation has a huge role to play, but innovation doesn't necessarily mean inventing things from scratch. Sometimes it means recovering things that we have done in the past.
This is Carolyn Stern, Hilti's global head of circular economy.
As long as we have been humans, we have taken old structures and made new structures out of them. And we've lost a little bit that habit, right, of keeping things in use, and that can be not only functional but beautiful, right? So you see a lot of innovation in terms of building owners of saying, let's not build a building from scratch. Let's really take what we have available. The Netherlands is really front and center in this. They have a great project, for example, of what used to be a prison. They've redesigned some of these into really luxury apartment buildings, and we're able to use something like 90% of the material that was there already to go from a prison to really high-end luxury spaces without destroying and building from scratch.
The repurposing of material is fundamental to the circular model, in which economic success is detached from the consumption of resources and resources remain in circulation for as long as possible. But the economic philosophy practiced by the Western world for the past few decades has been at odds with circular thinking.
So put simply, circularity is about not wasting valuable resources. And that sounds really obvious, but it's actually not how we've run the global economy for the last 70 or 80 years. We've forgotten the basic principle that we did understand for many decades, that materials are scarce and that producing things required effort. And the way that we've acted and run the economy more recently is as if materials are infinite and disposal has no environmental or economic cost, right? So I think from an economic perspective, it's really about valuing resources properly in a way that we've forgotten about over the last few decades.
Part of the reason many economies shifted away from circular thinking and towards a linear model has a lot to do with the growing gap between the cost of materials and the cost of the labor to turn those materials into a consumer product.
Small anecdote, I recently tried to get my boots repaired. And I live in Zurich, where the cost of labor is very high, and I went to go get my boots repaired, and I knew it was going to cost far more than buying a pair of new boots. What I didn't expect is for the repairman, so the person who makes their living repairing things, said, oh, you know, you really shouldn't bother repairing these. You should just buy new ones, right? And that sort of, you know, it was an older gentleman, and I think that profession is unfortunately really dying out. And the fact that we so internalize the idea of not maintaining the products for as long as possible, because we're just so used to buying new things.
But there are some companies who offer a circular service model that is both environmentally friendly and economically viable.
the industries that that tend to work with heavy machinery, complex machinery, especially those with a lot of metal, have kept those ideas alive pretty consistently. So in general, high value, complex machines that have very resistant parts are the first and most obvious candidates for what we today call circularity. But the fact that they didn't label it that way, and they were by no means doing it from a sustainability point of view, shows that it really is just good business to understand that those materials have value.
And Hilti's fleet management model happens to be a prime example of putting this kind of good business into practice.
And there, I think the aspects of fleets that were really revolutionary and really linked to the idea of circularity is this idea that Hilti maintains control of the product. And the customer is paying a monthly fee and repairs are on us. So we were able to do that because of the longevity and the repairability of our products, as well as the fact that we can offer repair. What we historically hadn't maximized and are now really starting to focus on is what do we do with those products since we do get them back at the end of the contract period. And that's what's really allowed us to build over the last 3 years a remanufacturing program on the basis of those collected fleet tools, where we're able to individually assess and reuse those tools either for tools on demand, if the entirety of the tool is still good, or extract individual components like electronics, motors, rotors, reuse those in repair, or donate them to external organizations. So that is really the first step in our remanufacturing journey, and we're now looking to expand that in many different directions. So in different spare parts, taking the next step into full components, and eventually bringing those components potentially back into production for new tools, not only into repair.
Carolyn shares a great example of how Hilti is helping to ensure all materials used in product production are reused within a circular manufacturing model. But what about components that can't be reused in their original form, like plastics?
One example that's been really exciting is with our tool cases. So tool cases are something that we collect as part of our fleet model, but we have previously not had an internal use case for those tool cases. What we're doing now is the collected tool cases are separated, shredded, cleaned, and divided also by color and sent back into the production of new tool cases. So our tool cases coming off the production line today are actually made with material that came from our very own tool cases.
Organizations like Hilti, who are striving to implement a circular model in which materials can be reused, are still working through how to most effectively execute reuse practices and evaluate success. But as our guests throughout this season have noted, the important thing is getting started. Reducing the consumption of new goods, reusing components, and recycling are foundational to the circular economy. And they are the three R's that are considered the framework for circularity.
It's the idea of material hierarchy, so that the most sustainable thing that you can do is not use the material in the first place or use that same material for longer. So that's the idea of reduce. After that, you have reuse. And here we can also talk about remanufacturing, repurposing, but that's basically using the materials a second time, either as a whole, so in the original product, or in parts or components. And the very last option is recycling, when you're really going down to using the material, but you've lost the product that it was originally linked to.
Reducing, reusing, and recycling materials helps lower carbon emissions coming from Scope 3, which, if you remember from our previous episode, is the largest scope for most organizations.
Today, we say that about 60% of our global CO2 emissions are caused one way or another by how we extract, produce, and use materials. So we tend to focus a lot about energy in the CO2 debate, but actually the role of materials is really big. And that's where the circular economy comes into play.
Although the practice of circularity is not new, how organizations are innovating to implement circular solutions are. And they're pretty exciting.
I'm Joanne Rodriguez. I'm the founder and CEO of MycoCycle. We train mushrooms to eat trash and create renewable bio-based materials.
You heard that right. MycoCycle is using the science of micro-remediation to naturally eliminate toxins often found in construction waste. Now, here's a little more background on Joanne.
I've spent probably the last 30 years in construction products and material manufacturing. 17 of those, I was with a major manufacturer of commercial roofing and building envelope materials. And I was their director of sustainable and strategic initiatives and co-chair green chemistry. There was really no overarching way to dispose of these materials responsibly. And it's hard to measure the volume of waste because it's not like you just have like this asphalt roll good. You have asphalt roll good, insulation, wood, all these things are usually married together. It's high volume, taking up a lot of space. But if we talked about asphalt shingles, which is easy to track, they pretty much have the same metric year over year. There are roughly 11 to 12 million tons of asphalt shingle going to landfill every year.
The world's overall waste problem is impossible to overlook. But how exactly are mushrooms helping?
So Mushroom 101, fungi is the mushroom, which is the cap that we see and eat and love. And the mycelium is the root structure. So that's makes up the entirety of the mushroom or the fungi, sorry. But the mushroom we don't ever use. We don't get to fruiting body. We just use the mycelium, the root. Well, that root structure has cell walls and that's made of chitin. And chitin is a naturally occurring material. So the duality or simplicity of it is while it grows through and decontaminates and reduces toxicity of materials and biodegrades it, it also builds this really cool usable byproduct material that is made of the chitinous root structure. And that has insulative properties, properties of fire resistance, water resistance, it's lightweight, anything from acoustic tiles to floors to walls, back to roofing and insulation, you name it. We're replacing things that have a high embodied carbon that are virgin materials mined from the earth. And we say, just take it from trash. Let's mine the trash that from the materials we already made. So we could drive circularity in the construction products industry.
And if you're still uncertain about the impacts that MycoCycle can have on a project, here's an example.
We have had the benefit of working with Meta on gypsum drywall waste. There's roughly 13 million tons of gypsum drywall every year just in the U.S. And that's facing a lot of regulatory issue because when it enters into landfill, it produces a hydrogen sulfide gas, which can be noxious, and it smells like rotten eggs. So the EPA heavily monitors that in landfill activities. So we're able to knock that down, take that smell out, and it's the most compelling evidence of how mycelium, fungal mycelium, the roots of the mushroom, actually work to not only degrade gypsum drywall waste, but transform it.
Circular solutions like those coming from Hilti and companies like MycoCycle are helping the industry become more sustainable. And they are just the beginning. Here's Caroline again.
We're working very hard to expand on all of the topics that we've started on. So a very big topic will be sustainability in design. And there is obviously a very strong correlation between supply and design. So how do we really move the needle in making our products more sustainable? And starting with how do we define that also in line with our customers' goals for their own sustainability and for the sustainability of their businesses? Then continuing to expand all of our reuse and remanufacturing. I think we've made a first great example of how a closed loop recycling system with our tool case, it makes financial and environmental sense and really builds into Hilti's strength. There are lots more opportunities to expand that into other materials and other products, and I think that will really take shape. And on the reuse, we're working hard on expanding that to more components, more tools, and in different directions so that we really take maximum value from the products that we collect already and are actually a large source of value for Hilti.
There is no reason why the construction products industry and the construction industry can't get more green and be on the cutting edge of technology as opposed to lagging behind it. None.
This is the fourth episode in our sustainability podcast series. Thanks for listening. In the next episode, we will transition topics slightly to focus on how sustainability impacts the health and safety of the people who build the world around us, as well as those who use the buildings once they are constructed. That's next time on In This Case.